You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. I really appreciate you taking the time to tune in to our show. We got a great show for you again today. An interesting guest, and of course my commentary about my view from the blue. But before we get into that, a couple things. I want you to follow me on Facebook. Go to Randy Sutton, the voice of American law enforcement. And also Twitter, at LT Randy Sutton. Also, please check out thewoundedblue.org. Thewoundedblue.org is the new national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. This is coming online. We have an incredible peer support team that assists law enforcement officers who are injured or disabled in the line of duty, and that includes post-traumatic stress. We're doing great work. We haven't officially launched. That's going to be during Police Week, May of this year, but we are providing peer support right now for injured and disabled law enforcement officers and those who are suffering from post-traumatic stress injury. If you need help, contact us, thewoundedblue.org. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room. Lots going on in the news about law enforcement. Most of it is the usual insanity that we'll be talking about. But in some good news, the Department of Justice just came out with a ruling: no civil rights charge in deadly Oklahoma police shooting. The investigation was closed after finding insufficient evidence to pursue federal civil rights charges against Betty Shelby. Now, you'll remember that she was the Tulsa, Oklahoma police officer who shot and killed a subject who was all high on PCP, did not comply with her instructions, went into his truck through the window, and fearing that there was a weapon involved, she opened fire and killed him. This sparked a huge outcry. She was arrested for murder, a completely politically motivated prosecution. If it hadn't been for the Fraternal Order of Police Legal Defense Fund, who spent over $1 million on her defense, who knows what might have happened to her. She was found not guilty. Then the Department of Justice did their investigation, and they have now cleared her as well. Now, the interesting thing here is that Betty Shelby was a guest on this program after her trial ended in her not guilty finding. She did have her life absolutely turned upside down. After she was found not guilty, the sheriff, the police chief of Tulsa, refused to put her back to any meaningful duties. They basically hid her in a closet somewhere, harassed her, and she eventually was offered a job by an area sheriff's office where she is currently working. But throughout all of this ordeal, she was found not guilty in the criminal trial, and now she has been found to have no evidence to pursue federal civil rights charges. This should be the end of it, but you know that there will still be a federal lawsuit from the survivors, which will be a wrongful death lawsuit, and I guarantee you that will not go to trial because Tulsa couldn't write that check fast enough, knowing the political environment. But at least the criminal justice system worked in this case. The victimized officer, who was victimized by a political persecution, by prosecution, she came out with her life intact, and she is continuing to serve and protect. She is using this horrible experience to educate other law enforcement officers about how to withstand this type of persecution. So, Betty Shelby, if you're listening, I'm very happy that this verdict came out from the Department of Justice as well. Now, in another victory for law enforcement, police officers themselves, you'll remember that Stephon Clark was the individual in Sacramento who, about a year ago, was observed by neighbors breaking into cars and houses. A Sacramento police helicopter observed him doing the very same things. They vectored in the ground units. They got in a foot pursuit with him. They chased him behind a residence. Turned out the residence was his grandfather's house. Then the police confronted him. This was very late at night in the darkness. They ordered him to get on the ground. Instead of doing so, this individual raised a phone. Of course, they couldn't see that it was a phone. In a shooting stance, he went into a shooting stance. He had an object in his hand. And then he advanced on the officers. You could hear one of the officers saw what was in his hand and yelled, "Gun, gun, gun." Fearing for their lives, they did exactly what they should have done. They opened fire and they neutralized the suspect. Well, it turned out that it was a phone. Now, that began days of protests, the accusations of racism, of course. Even though the suspect was black, there was a black officer and a white officer. Both did exactly what they should have done. They saw the threat and they dealt with it. How they could figure out that there was racial profiling, which is what some of the media is saying, I don't know, considering that he was observed by neighbors breaking into houses and cars. But that's what the media does. They make up their own narrative. And of course, it's agenda driven by activists. Black Lives Matter was particularly vehement in this one. Now, so this was a year ago, and there have been protests, and there have been marches, and there's been laws trying to be enacted, which we're going to talk about here shortly, in response to this. And the investigation is now completed. And just last week, the district attorney made the announcement that there would be no charges against the officers and that the shooting was justifiable. Now, she also added a few little tidbits from the investigation, and that is that Stephon Clark, besides being a repeat offender and a criminal violator, and besides the fact that he was breaking into cars and houses when he was approached by law enforcement, had just days before beaten his girlfriend a number of times and it was wanted for domestic violence. Well, in a series of messages between the girlfriend and Clark, she told him, "Hey, look, I'm done getting beaten by you and the police are looking for you and you're going to go to jail and you're going to spend a lot of time in jail." He told her that he wasn't going to spend any time in jail. If he needed to kill himself, he would. And then part of the investigation, they found that he was searching the internet for methodologies for how to commit suicide. On the night that he was killed, not only did he not comply, not only did he go out and commit crimes, but they also found that in his system during the autopsy, codeine, cocaine, three or four other drugs. And when this was announced, do you think that it ended the wild tales of police murdering this man? No, it didn't. It continued on. In fact, it continued into protests where there were 85 arrests made. Black Lives Matter actually made up wanted posters. I actually have one in front of me. It's absolutely astounding. They made up wanted posters with pictures of the two police officers saying "wanted for murder of Stephon Clark, wanted by the people of Sacramento, Officer Terrence McConnell and Officer Jared Robinet." and then they give a description, and then this is absolutely insane, and it makes it look like a real wanted poster, and it says that caution, March 18, 2018, officers Mercado and Robinet fired over 20 shots, killing unarmed 22-year-old Stefan Clark in his own backyard. This was an act of police terror that the district attorney has decided was not criminal. We cannot tolerate this cold-blooded murder killer cops in our city. No justice, no peace. And then they say, should be considered armed and dangerous. I mean, this insanity just continues. Now, you would think that, okay, activists, Black Lives Matter, they've got their agenda. They've made it very clear for years what their agenda is. It's anti-law enforcement. They want actually the police to be disbanded and there to be no police. Gee, what a great thought that is. Well, you would think that normal people, normal human beings with any common sense and any level of intelligence would just look at this and shrug their shoulders and go, this is crazy. But the mayor of Sacramento, that the mayor of the city where this took place is unbelievable. This is a headline that came out right after the shooting was ruled justified. Mayor pushes to criminalize justified shootings after Stefan Clark ruling. Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg vowed to change use of force laws in the wake of the Stefan Clark decision. The mayor of Sacramento used the district attorney's announcement that no charges would be filed against the police officers who killed Stefan Clark to recommit to changing the use of deadly force policy in California. Now, here's the deal. There has been a movement afoot by supporters of Black Lives Matter and the ACLU and the ultra-liberal politicians of California to change the use of force policies, laws actually, to create a law that would make it easy to prosecute police officers when they use deadly force. Now, in this idiot mayor's address, he apologized over and over and over again to Stefan Clark's family. Well, you know what? He doesn't have anything to apologize for. The police didn't do anything wrong here. This was a decision by Stefan Clark who committed a suicide by cop. This was a decision by Stefan Clark to beat his girlfriend to the point where he was going to go to jail. It was a decision by Stefan Clark to go out and commit a bunch of burglaries of cars and houses, and it was Stefan Clark's decision to ingest all kinds of a veritable mixed bag of drugs on this particular night. So when this pandering political animal Steinberg goes and apologizes for the actions of two brave police officers who did their duties, instead of apologizing to the cops, which who he should be apologizing to, all he's doing is pandering for more votes. So in reality, now this is what he says. I mean, even the statement is incredible. He says that this is from the mayor. The current constitutional standard says that if an officer-involved shooting is deemed reasonable after the fact, then it is justifiable. I believe that the standard needs to be changed. Huh? I mean, it doesn't even make sense on its face. But see, here's the reality. They are trying to change the law so that after the investigation is done, if the subject, say, had a fake gun, and they really could not have harmed the law enforcement officers, they want to prosecute the officers for murder. Instead of, you see, the Supreme Law voted a long time ago in a case called Graham versus Connor that a reasonable officer standard should be applied. What would a reasonable officer do in the circumstances? Would they feel threatened? Would they feel their life is threatened? And if so, then it is a justifiable shooting, which is as it should be. Remember, police officers are acting very, very quickly, within seconds, milliseconds even, when confronted with a threat. They aren't going to be right all the time. And the fact of the matter is that out of the 1,000 or so law enforcement shootings each year, very, very few are deemed to be improper. And that's because of the training and experience of these officers. But you have to understand that they literally have seconds to make a life and death decision. If now we change the standard, which is what the politicians of California are trying to do, to, okay, at the end of the investigation, if the, like in this case, there was a phone, and even though they thought it was a gun, it was a phone, then you can prosecute the cops for murder. It is absolutely sane. And they've named it some type of, I forgot what they called it, but it's propaganda all the way. And what that bill really is a cop killer bill. It will force officers to hesitate to the point of giving up their own lives because they're worried about getting prosecuted for a shooting that they believe is justifiable. This is part of the war on cops. And this mayor in Sacramento, Steinberg, he's a symptom. He really, truly is a symptom. And speaking of symptoms, UC Davis professor Joshua Clover was discovered to have been tweeting from 2014 to 2016 some of the most incredible statements calling for the deaths of police officers that you can hardly imagine. One of them was, some people think the police should be reformed. They should be killed. Yeah, he actually said this publicly. One was, hey, it's easier to kill cops if you wait till their back is turned. I mean, it's outrageous. And then what happens? A Davis police officer is murdered. After he makes these comments, after he incites this violence, after he celebrates death, and he celebrates murder, and he's a full professor at UC Davis. So he gets, a young reporter found this out, and there was some fairly substantial media coverage about it. But UC Davis, instead of dealing with this in the appropriate manner, which of course is to fire this guy, they not only defended him, they embraced him. In fact, they said something along the lines of, well, we have to allow creativity from our professors. Are you kidding me? This guy can literally get away, not only get away, but be celebrated as a great poet because he's an English teacher, and he is making comments that literally celebrate the death of police officers. You'll remember, if you listen to this broadcast, that a few weeks ago, I jumped all over the Baltimore School Board for their brilliant decision not to allow armed police officers in their school system, the school resource officers, not to allow them to have weapons. I mean, it flies in the face of everything. The Parkland shooting, all of the violence in schools, and they want the police officers, who are supposed to be there protecting the kids and the faculty, not to have weapons. I mean, even on its face, it's only a blithering idiot would make that decision. But the entire school board voted not to allow police officers to have guns. Well, what happened? Just 2 weeks later, an armed suspect walks into a Baltimore school and shoots somebody. Yeah, uh-huh, that's right. A school shooting takes place just 2 weeks after these morons on the school board decide not to allow their police officers in the schools to be armed. Luckily, there happened to be a meeting at the school where there were armed police officers. There happened to be there on that day. and they intervened and with a minimal amount of victimization. I believe only one person was shot and injured. They were able to neutralize the suspect. So now 2 weeks later, here's the headline. Just weeks after voting to prohibit armed cops, Baltimore School Board reverses. Well, duh. It took a shooting. It absolutely took a shooting to get these officials to have the common sense to arm their cops. I mean, it's every day it seems like another example of incredible idiocy when it comes down to the actions and the thought processes of elected officials and governmental leadership. Well, that's about it for today. That is my view from the blue. And now we're going to take a walk into the interview room where you're going to hear a great guest. I want to tell you about a really interesting company that has a nationwide security presence. It's called offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's actually law enforcement specialists, but you can check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. They have a very unique approach to providing security to commercial establishments, residential, any security need that you might have, because they use actual sworn officers. So if you are a police officer or deputy in this country and you want to work extra jobs, as most do, usually you go through your department. This company, offdutypoliceofficers.com, is their website, law enforcement specialists, actually makes arrangements so that you can work those off-duty jobs, and they work in concert with your agency. It's a great opportunity, and also they have a great presence in almost every state in the union. So, law enforcement specialists, if you are a law enforcement officer and you want to work extra jobs, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. If you have a security need, if you are a commercial establishment, if you are a construction company, you need traffic jobs, contact them. They have the personnel. They are trained. They are law enforcement officers, and they have all the abilities to provide all of your security needs. And they are a great company. They're based out of Arizona, but they're all over the country. Offdutypoliceofficers.com, and it's law enforcement specialists. You can also contact them by phone, 888-572-2442. It's 888-572-2442. If you're a law enforcement officer, you know that wearing body armor, besides being uncomfortable, sometimes can get a little odoriferous, if you will. Wearing that gets sweaty, gets hot. It's difficult sometimes to find the right deodorizer that works, that is natural, that will take care of business. And there's a great product on the market, and it's Arrest My Vest Spray. And it's military police grade odor eliminating spray. Now, you don't have to just use it on vests. It's good for all kinds of clothing items. Arrest My Vest Spray. Now, where do you get it? Stinkyvest.com. Of course, Stinkyvest.com. And they've got this great product. I highly suggest it. It's not expensive. It works really well. And it eliminates odors through absorbing molecules, odor-absorbing molecules. Doesn't use harmful chemicals, and it's great for pets. It's great for all your clothing items. So check it out, stinkyvest.com, Arrest My Vest Spray. Check it out, stinkyvest.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome to the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I have a great guest with me today. We're going to talk about some very disturbing issues facing the American law enforcement officer. John Bakid has been an attorney for a number of years. Besides being an attorney in California, he is also the lead attorney for the Federated University Police Officers Association. Now, what they do, they handle all of the, they're basically, they handle the unions for the entire California university system, including UC Davis. And what makes John even more unique is that he himself is a former police officer. John, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Randy, thank you so much for having me and for doing what you do for law enforcement. It's definitely needed in this fun day and age.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that. You know, you're in a very unique position. You deal and you interact with hundreds of law enforcement officers in the California system, and including UC Davis, which has seen. You know, this is not the first time you've been on the show, because the way that these officers have been treated has been abysmal by the university system, as well as by many of the citizens in that area. But what's happened here of late is really shocking to me. So let's talk about this story that's been in the news here recently. There was a journalist, a young journalist, who discovered that a UC Davis tenured professor, this guy, his name is Joshua Clover. Now, this guy has made three that we know of comments that he made out on social media. I'm going to read them. This is from 2014. "I am thankful that every living cop will one day be dead, some by their own hand, some by others. Too many die of old age." Then in another in 2016 was, "I mean, it's easier to shoot cops when their backs are turned, no?" And that was from 2014, excuse me. And then the third one was from 2016. "People think that cops need to be reformed. They need to be killed." I can't even imagine the frustration of the officers that you represent who are assigned to protect this guy.
Yeah, Randy, I got to tell you, unfortunately, in today's day and age, a lot of people like to hide behind First Amendment and use it as a shield. What they fail to realize is that there are consequences, or should be consequences, for their actions. It is unacceptable for anybody to refer to any group of people as needing to be killed, let alone cops. And we can talk about this for days. It's just unacceptable, and this person does not need to be on the University of California's payroll. He should not be placed in a position of authority where young, impressionable minds look up to him and are probably influenced by him. He needs to go.
You know, so even more chilling to me is the recent murder of a Davis police officer, a beautiful, young, vibrant woman who entered the field and was so clearly proud of her profession, Natalie Corona. You know, this is, it's her murder that I think gave this journalist thought to bring this out now.
Absolutely. The ironic thing here is that the UC Davis campus hosted the memorial service for Officer Natalie Corona, may God rest her soul. And then to turn around and find that they have a professor who actively advocates for the callous murder of police officers just must have blown this young writer's mind. And I have a lot of respect for somebody who went out of their way to, in an environment that probably wouldn't support it, to bring out this person's evil thoughts and statements.
You know, so when these first two tweets came out, it was 2014. Let's go back to that time in history a little bit, because it's actually, I think, essential to the understanding of this complacency that seems to be pervading the academic culture. You know, who was president in 2014? It was under his tutelage, if you will, that the anti-law enforcement agenda began really coming to the fore, both in the media and politically from his office, including the Department of Justice being weaponized against law enforcement, law enforcement being demonized by the president himself, and the lies of Ferguson being perpetuated by that administration. And I don't know about you, but I think that is what empowered this professor, if you will, to come out publicly with these type of comments, when I don't think if he hadn't been enabled to do it, maybe he wouldn't have felt protected enough. What are your thoughts?
You know, the First Amendment's been around for many, 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 many years. So that's not something that just popped up recently. I, like you, have noticed a significant increase in the negativity towards law enforcement over the last decade. And I also attribute it to that interesting period of time that we all experienced. Now, here's what I'll tell you. People have chosen to follow the leader, so to speak, in attacking and antagonizing police officers. And until today, this person, I like to use the term SOS, stuck on stupid. He's still making references to Ferguson as if something was done improperly by the police officers when three separate investigations ruled that the person did not have his hands up and that the shooting was in fact justified. I believe that certain people live in a bubble and do not want to face reality. That's the only reason why this person can attempt to justify in his own mind why he said the things that he said.
In fact, when I read the initial article, this young reporter, he delved much deeper into it, and he actually got a statement from Clover, who basically ended it with saying, "Why don't you give Michael Brown's family a call, see what they think?" I mean, which shows you exactly where his mind is.
Absolutely. There's no question. This person believes in his own mind that the world would be a better place without police officers. And that's why I'm saying he lives in an altered reality, because I've seen during the 91 riots, when police were not there on the spot, how scary it can be in downtown LA when people were burning buildings and rioting. It's a scary thought not having police officers around, but unfortunately, some of these people lack the significant life experience and are too buried in the books, so to speak, and can't really rationalize a reasonable alternative to whatever problem that they think exists.
Exactly. And let's, you know, what's the feelings from the officers that you have spoken to about this particular professor?
So the ones that I've spoken to did not know him personally, but they are in shock that this person is still around, not only because they're so offended by what he said about police officers, but they all asked me the exact same question. If I or anybody I knew had said something similar about any group of people, would I still be employed? And I think we all know the answer to that. As a matter of fact, in my letter to the University of California last week that I sent you a copy of, I asked the University of California a very simple question. Would this person still be employed had he made a statement to that effect about any other group of people? And sadly, I think I know the answer.
You know, I want to give credit where credit is due. That this story was broken by a reporter named Nick Irvin, who wrote for the California Aggie, and he got up to the leadership of UC Davis, And they basically gave a little lip service as far as you know, condemning the comments. But what they basically said was that they embrace his ability to be creative. I mean, it's unconscionable. And so, did you? I know that you wrote a letter to UC Davis leadership. Have you received a response to it?
So I received a very brief email response thanking me for providing the outline of my concerns and that they would get back to me shortly. And that was the last I heard of it, late last week.
The UC Davis has been a hotbed of anti-law enforcement sentiment for quite a while. I mean, and of course we saw some, tremendous violence taking place on the campus, which was basically accepted and I think even encouraged by the UC Davis academic leadership. Your officers were injured. They were ordered to pull back instead of protecting people. What can be done? Is there anything that can be done legally to hold the administration accountable for embracing and protecting this guy?
One of the biggest things that they keep hanging their hat on, I was able to dispute. There's a fairly recent, within the last decade or so, a U.S. Supreme Court case, it's the Garcetti case, that stated that public employees, while they have a First Amendment right, it is somewhat limited, even if they're doing something in their out-of-work capacity, and this is just me paraphrasing, if it affects the ability for the employer to operate efficiently. So, unfortunately, they hold the cards when it comes to disciplining this person or terminating his employment. However, what needs to happen is parents, students, members of the public need to show their outrage over this person being left in a room with young adults who may or may not be very impressionable, or start to dig his style, basically, and think that what he's saying holds some weight because he was allowed to say it and was allowed to continue employment. It's very easy to connect those dots. I've been representing officers with the UC for over a decade now, and I handled the UC Davis pepper spray incident back in 2011. I saw the incident in Berkeley that you and I spoke about where officers were pretty much told to stand down. What needs to happen is the University of California needs to become neutral politically and not even give the impression of advocating for one side versus the other. And unfortunately, that's what it appears like right now.
Oh, absolutely. That's really clear. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, every employer has standards of conduct, written standards of conduct for their employees. Now, I'm a strong believer in First Amendment rights. Even hate speech, as foul as it is, I understand why hate speech has to be a protected speech from the government. Otherwise, you could literally assign that title to many different topics, and then the government would be, sending people off to the gulag. So I'm a strong believer in the right to free speech. But doesn't an employer have rights also that their employees can be held to certain standards? And aren't those standards of conduct actually in writing?
Yeah, here's the weird thing. I actually looked into it for professors, and remind me to send it to you a little later. I apologize for not sending it in advance. And it's about as loose as I've ever seen. Certainly nothing that would ever be contemplated for police officers, for example, because they are held to a higher standard. Here's the funny part. They are so concerned about allowing professors to say and do whatever they want. What they focus on in those standards of conduct are the protected classes, the typical race, gender, all that good stuff, as it relates to either students or fellow employees. And I'm completely paraphrasing like a, I don't know, 6 or 7 page document here. But the bulk of the protections and the purposes that they may go after in a professor who's an employee have to do with the protected classes and as they relate to a colleague or a student.
Ah, okay. So in other words, any other human being, they can say whatever they want to about them and advocate even the most foulest type of information and call for their deaths.
Yeah, I don't agree that they can call for anybody's death. And like I said, the sad reality is, had they called or had he called for the death of any other group of people, just think about how that sounds. Death to this group of people.
Right, right.
It's got a chilling effect. But because this group of people happen to be police officers, then they're going to respect his intellectual ability and not want to part ways with somebody that they value greatly. However, had he made that death statement regarding any other group of people, I assure you, they would have been very quick to show him the door.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and one of the other factors that I saw from Mr. Irvin's article was that he talked to some of this professor's contemporaries, other people in the English department of the university. And to his shock, the other professors seem to just shrug this off as just another day at the office. Have we become so jaded that these type of comments don't even raise the ire of a contemporary?
Unfortunately, I believe that when it comes to police officers, that is the accepted norm for many people. And it is not only unfortunate, it's very sad how they're willing to take away the humanity of a police officer simply because of the chosen profession that they're in and not necessarily consider them as human beings. And again,
you hit it right on the head. They do not consider police officers human beings. And this to me is not only frightening, it is abhorrent. And these are the same people who will go out and march allegedly for civil rights, but they don't recognize the civil rights of other people simply because of the uniform that they wear.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. It's very hypocritical in that it's okay for me to have First Amendment rights, but it's not okay for you because your opinion is different than mine.
And wasn't it at UC Davis just a short time ago that a conservative student was assaulted and beaten simply because he was trying to talk about his opinion?
I believe that was at UC Berkeley once again.
You know, the hypocritical nature of this entire topic, people wouldn't even believe it, that this would be considered to be okay conduct. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, from your interactions with the officers, this is really what you know concerns me, both as a law enforcement professional and also as a journalist. And that is, how is this affecting the morale? You know, we all know that the atmosphere in which a police officer serves really has a dramatic effect on their emotional and mental health. So, you know, when you're in an environment where you feel like everyone is the enemy, how are these guys, men and women, holding up?
I got to tell you, they really feel abandoned by the employer simply because this is not a situation where somebody says they hate the police or anything like that. This is somebody calling for the death and the callous murder of police officers and even going so far as to tell people the easiest way to do it. So I got to tell you, they do not believe that the University of California is either taking what he's saying seriously or looking out for their best interest and continuing to have him around. it is unacceptable that somebody can be allowed to continue employment under these circumstances. And you can't help but feel for these officers who are sitting there, who sometimes get assigned to detail to protect professors, maybe not him individually, but there could be a situation where something goes down on campus and they have to protect him when this person is calling for their murder.
It's really, it's, when I, you know, I don't use the word beyond belief very often, but this one really is to me. Can you imagine the family of Natalie Corona? I mean, I can't imagine what they must be feeling when they see this taking place, and basically the university and the public just shrugs it off.
Yeah, I hate to think of the pain that they had to go through at the time and the pain that they have to go through now. Unfortunately, I've attended many peace officer funerals, both back when I was working as a cop and recently, and it's never easy, but this is something that can, it's the equivalent of rubbing salt on a wound, and sometimes, unfortunately, certain people want that effect. It defies logic to me. It can't, no normal human being can be okay with this. But it, I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah. No, you and I think exactly alike, and I guess this perverted response is the only way I can couch this by the leadership. I mean, has academia become so leftist that this type of behavior just doesn't even raise an eyebrow anymore? I just, what are these kids that are in the university? They're not being educated, they're being indoctrinated. And what does that tell us for the future? And how does that affect the safety of the American law enforcement officer? This is what concerns me.
That's certainly my concern as well. I'm going to share something with you, Randy. One of the things that I've always pushed for, especially when you're dealing with, you know, citizen review boards or city councils or anything like that, prior to anybody passing judgment on the job of a police officer, I don't want them to go out and do a ride along in the fun part of town on a Sunday morning in a suit where nothing's going on. I want them to go through and work the roughest part of town on a graveyard shift on a weekend, several nights in a row. Then I want them to go through not a fast machine training. I want them to go through semi munitions training where they get pelted and walk out with welts on their bodies. That's about as close as they'll get to a shoot, don't shoot situation. And then let's begin the dialogue. Unfortunately, a lot of people like to talk from their pedestals. They don't want to know what's going on the other side. They are so caught up in their beliefs sometimes that are so high up in a cloud that they don't match reality, that there's no way to have a dialogue with somebody who's at that level.
You know, when we talk about the phrase, the ivory tower of academia, I don't think there could be a bigger or a better illustration than this topic and this professor.
I really believe, and I'll repeat this, I think that members of the community, students, parents of students that are writing those checks for their tuition, they need to voice their opinion. They can't sit back and watch this. It's unacceptable. People of all shapes and sizes and political affiliations, they all need to get in on this and let them know that this is unacceptable.
Well, I totally agree with you. At least, you know, some of the mainstream media has actually covered this. They took this obscure article that was written by this young man, and you know, and it actually has hit the mass media, which kind of surprised me. But I'm not seeing a backlash that is really of any import from you know, any groups that have any sway over an organization like the University of California.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. So far, I have not seen anything sizable other than the media coverage, which I'm thankful for. But we need to see more. And if, I mean, I'll just look into my crystal ball real quick. Unless we see that call to action, he will get away with this, and that is unacceptable.
I mean, let's be real. These comments were made 5 years ago, and can you imagine what he's been saying? If this is what he said out in public, can you imagine what he's saying in the privacy of a classroom?
Well, I will tell you that in my letter, I also demanded an investigation into his, for lack of a better word, on-duty conduct, where students are interviewed to see if he's spewing this filth in the classroom and what else he may be saying. Because according to the UC, which I'll say again, I don't agree with them, what he says off the university has to be treated different than what he says at the university. So I asked them, I told them that we're demanding an investigation into what he has actually said at the university. Again, no response yet regarding that demand, and I will certainly keep you posted.
Yeah, I think the fox is in the hen house on that one. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. John, your viewpoints here are really important, and I really thank you for not only taking the time, but for the service that you do for the men and women of law enforcement of University of California.
Randy, it's always a pleasure, and I'll say it again, everybody needs to pray for police officers because they truly have the toughest job in the world. Over the last decade, we've seen a decline in the relations between the community and police officers, and it's not because of their actions, it's because of the environment that we've all been put in.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks again, John.
I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. I have a very special announcement to make. You have heard me make a few references over the last few weeks, and if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you might have noticed that these notices are becoming a little more frequent. I'm going to tell you about the Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I've been working on this for more than 2 years. This is a organization that I wish didn't need to exist. But the fact is that when a police officer or law enforcement officer gets injured or disabled in the line of duty, very often they are abandoned and alone by their police agencies, by the people that they serve with, and by the communities. It's heartbreaking. We are creating this organization, which is going to launch officially during Police Week, May of this year. But right now, there's something very special I'm going to ask you to do. And that's going to go to look at the film trailer that is now on YouTube. We've created a feature film called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. We're going to be launching this film soon as well. But I would love for you to check out the trailer. So if you go to YouTube and then put in The Wounded Blue, you'll see the trailer. If you can donate, please do. Go to www.thewoundedblue.org. You can see what we're going to be offering, or you can see how we're going to be changing and protecting the lives of our injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm going to need your help. Go to thewoundedblue.org and check out the trailer on YouTube at The Wounded Blue. You'll be hearing much more about this incredible organization as time goes by.
End of watch. with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have two names to read. The first is Sergeant Steve Hinkle of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office in Tennessee. Sergeant Steve Hinkle succumbed to gunshot wounds sustained 3 days earlier at 3606 Highway 11 West. Deputies had responded to the residence to conduct a welfare check on an occupant. As they approached the home, the occupant opened fire on them, causing them to seek cover. As the deputies attempted to establish communication with the man, he opened fire a second time, striking Sergeant Hinkle during the exchange of gunfire. The subject was found deceased inside the home several hours later. Sergeant Hinkle was transported to the hospital, where he died as a result of his wounds on February 26, 2019. He had served with the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office for 27 years. Sergeant Steve Hinkle, Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, Tennessee. End of watch Tuesday, February 26, 2019. The second is Police Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg of the Midland Police Department in Texas. Police Officer Nathan Heidelberg was shot and killed while responding to a burglary alarm at a residence at 3306 Eagle Cove in Midland. Officer Heidelberg, a probationary officer, he was training, and two other officers had responded to the alarm call at 2:30 a.m. They were at the open front door, making loud announcements, identifying themselves, when the homeowner opened fire toward the flashlight Officer Heidelberg was holding. Officer Heidelberg was struck by a round above his vest. He was transported to a local hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds at 8:30 a.m. The homeowner who shot him was arrested and charged with manslaughter. Officer Heidelberg had served with the Midland Police Department for 5 years. Police Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg, Midland Police Department, Texas, end of watch Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. May they rest in peace. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio. A couple of other things. First of all, we are about to launch the Wounded Blue, our first GoFundMe campaign to assist this organization raise funds for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. So please go to Facebook and go to The Wounded Blue, follow the page, and you will see the announcement for not only the GoFundMe campaign, but also the release of our film, the documentary, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Now, in addition to that, I got some other news. My new television show just went live. Go to your phone, punch in the app section, and put in OpsLens, OpsLens, and you will find True Blue, the voice of American law enforcement, on the OpsLens TV network. I think you're going to love it. So check out The Wounded Blue and True Blue, the TV show. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.